You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornRoast.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. On today's episode, like always, two segments on two things. First segment, breaking down the Pacers' 106-97 loss to the Bucks, and a second segment on a player I think looks lethargic, out of place, bored, ready to be move on. I will not give you his name at this moment. You have to stick around to hear that. But first, let's get right to it. The Pacers lose to the Milwaukee Bucks, 106-97. They lose the game, I believe, on a 30-11 run to end the game. At one point, the Pacers held a 10-point lead in this game, shockingly enough, in the fourth quarter, I believe. Giannis killed them all night, and I wouldn't say it was with his just like, it wasn't necessarily with his superb kicking out of the post, but it was Giannis just backing into the lane, going down there, fighting for points constantly all night. I mean, he made 9 of 10 free throws, was essentially the entire difference in the game, which is 9 points. It led to the Bucks taking a total of 14 more free throws. They made 8 more than the Pacers. But Giannis just fighting for points all night was huge. I mean, you saw. I mean, looking at Daddy's Young Guard last night, 4 fouls. Bojan and Garden a little bit too, 4 fouls. Sabonis, who was kind of down there fighting around too, 4 fouls. I mean, these are guys. Giannis was just fighting time after time for points in the lane. And he wasn't always making his shots, but he was drawing the foul calls. And that was huge. And that kind of would be the difference in this whole game. Nobody else in the Bucks came off of like fantastic. I mean, you look at it. You got Middleton 5 of 16, Lopez 3 of 11. Brogdon had probably the best game of any of them, was 6 of 11 for 17 points, but he had, you know, a 17-5-5, which is a pretty average Brogdon line for him. But none of it was like, oh wow, Middleton killed you with 25 points or Lopez killed you by hitting 5 threes. No, it was Giannis. Bully ball might be the right way to put it. I mean, it reminded me of LeBron type basketball where LeBron in the playoffs last year just said, I can't rely on anybody else. Screw this. I'm going to do it myself. I'm going to draw fouls from every player. I'm going to get in the lane. I'm going to constantly take layups. I mean, Giannis had 22-point field goals taken. I don't have the number of how many of those were inside 5-10 feet, but you watched the game. If you watched the game, maybe you didn't. But by watching the game, you could tell it was a good amount. He took I couldn't tell you the exact number, but a lot of those were taken inside the lane 3 to 5 feet. I mean, he was just fighting for points, and he was fighting for rebounds, and just all those things that made the difference because, frankly, you know, the difference last time was Thad Young was able to stop Giannis, so maybe we should get rid of the Thad as the Giannis stopper thing. I think that's out the window. But Thad was able to hold Giannis 18 points and on him by himself have 21 points. Well, this game, it looked different. Thaddeus Young looked exhausted from having to guard Giannis. He wasn't 3 of 9. He just didn't have the same kind of, you know, offensive bounce, which you don't expect from him. But I'm saying that's what it kind of takes to beat a team this good, is that, like, you have to have a guy who on one end is stopping us and on the other end is scoring. I mean, that used to be the thing with Paul George back in the LeBron Miami Heat days, was George could play one end of floor really well. He could either play really good on offense or do a really good job guarding LeBron. But the problem was, even a really good job guarding LeBron holding the 25 points, and then you still need some offense somewhere, and George was kind of the best option, but didn't have the energy to carry the team offensively. And it's fine. I mean, it's just, you don't expect guys to be these constant two-way monsters and play 38 minutes. It's hard. And so that's what makes the great players great, is the guys who can do that. You know, Giannis can do that. He can play 38 minutes of both ends of the floor and be a dominant force. LeBron can do that when he wants to. Durant can do that. That's what makes those guys next-level type of players. But in this game, I mean, what you needed was some of the other guys to sort of step up. And they had a shot to win this game. So let's put it that way. This wasn't like they were blown off the court. They were, like I said, they were up 10 at one point in the fourth quarter. They had a shot. They blew it, let's be honest. But you need a better game from Myles Turner, who was 4 of 13. 1 of 4 from 3. He just didn't have a good night. It just didn't seem like he had a good night. He couldn't get space. They did a pretty nice job preventing him from getting those pick-and-pop threes, especially at the end of the game. There was one that I really thought, wow, they did a nice job. It really didn't matter anyways. But they did a nice job just kind of, you know, not letting that pick and roll with Darren Collison and Myles Turner kill them, which is a huge factor. A lot of teams kind of just let Turner shoot the open three a lot, and they did a good job stopping that. And then you really didn't get, you got okay production out of Sabonis. You got okay production out of Collison. You got okay especially out of Bojan. I know 20-6 is like an okay production for Bojan, but honestly, for Bojan, 20-6 on 7-14 is not a level he's been playing at. I mean, you know, a 9-14 game is what I expect from Bojan. Now, Bojan had a good name. I think it's be wrong to just knock him for 20-6. But I'm saying, in terms of what you needed to win the game, you needed somebody to have a extraordinary game. That's the problem by playing the Giannis and the Bucks, is that to beat the best, somebody has to play at their level. And when you don't have your best player like Oladipo who could do that, you're kind of screwed. I mean, I was watching the end of the game, was tight, right? I think it was 93 all, something like that. One of those points, about 2 minutes left, I thought, this is the problem. If you had Vic right now at home, game tied, 2 minutes left, I have a pretty good chance to win. At least a better than 50% chance of winning this game. Maybe even like 70% chance. But when you don't have that guy and the other team has a guy like Giannis who can be clutch, you're kind of screwed. In that sense, because you don't have a guy who can just put the ball in his hands, tell him, go score a point, keep the game going back and forth, and close out the game. They didn't have that. They didn't have a guy who could do that, and you could tell in the end of the game. And that's the problem, is that's not a knock on this team, because they had built the team with that guy, and then he just got hurt. And so it's not like you can say, oh, this team is, the Pacers are so flawed because they don't have that end-of-game closer, because they had that guy, and it just, bad luck caught them. So it's just a game you're going to lose. It's a game you're going to lose when you don't have your best player, and it's what happens. And as an NBA fan, as a Pacer fan, you can't let yourself down on that. You have to kind of move on and say, all right, well, this team played really well. You know, this team is still, I guess, improving. There are still, you know, you're seeing better nights out of guys and so on and so on. But, you know, this has kind of gotten to my point of, like, I don't really understand the Wes Matthews signing, which I'm writing a column for it for Indy Cornrows, was like, you know, on nights like these where you lose to a good team like the Bucks, 106-97, you're right, you're like, you think, well, okay, you had a good game out of Thad, Bojan, Collison, Sabonis, and maybe Turner. I thought Turner didn't have a good game, but Sabonis probably did. Well, what does that do for you in the long term, right? I mean, you're thinking, like, Thad may not be here next year. Thad didn't have a good game, but, like, so with the good players, about good games. Let's do it. Bojan, maybe not be here. We'll probably be back, but could not. Collison, same way, had an okay game. He might not be back. Sabonis is the only one. So you're thinking, like, okay, great. We lost the best team in the East by 9 points, but I'm not sure in the long run it did anything for us. You know, if you had this game you lost, and let's say Aaron Holiday played 15 minutes and scored 12 points, it would have been like, wow, oh, we had a young guy, our rookie, played against the best team in the East and had 12 points. That's an encouraging sign. But this game, you take it away of like, well, you know, a lot of the veterans played well. This team isn't good enough to beat the best team in the East, and you move on. And so, you know, I think the problem with signing Wes Matthews, you get kind of rid of those moral victories, unless you see like a Leaf have a great game, or unless, like, it's a bonus or Turner has this great game. There's not many moral victories in losing by 9 points, even if it's the best team, because there's no long-term kind of outlook of, like, yeah, next year this is going to... This losing this game this year to this team, that is going to matter for them next year, because you're going to have this guy get better, because most of the guys that played well have a 50-50 chance of being on this team next year and definitely aren't in the factor of plans for 2-3 years down the road. I mean, I would say the only two players that played... Well, maybe you could throw in three... If you throw in Joseph, but of the 9 guys who play significant minutes, Turner, Sabonis, and Joseph might be the only 3 guys really in the long-term plan for the Pacers, and that means past 2-3 seasons from now. And so when none of those 3 guys, I mean, Sabonis had an okay game, have great games, there's no moral victories to have, because it's like, great, our veteran guys we brought in who are on 1-year deals and going to be gone had great games. Great, fantastic. That does so much for your team in the long run. And so that's my biggest gripe with the Wes Matthews signing, and you'll see I have a full column out on, we out probably on Friday on Indy Cornrows, but you can read it there. Other things to look at in this game, I mean, the Pacers are clearly a better home team. You can kind of see it. So they're 22-8 at home now, which is a really good home record. It's not all-time great. It's not like 39-2 like the Denver Nuggets were a few years. I think it was the year after they traded Carmelo in 2012. But they're a good home team. You can see the Bucks struggle against this team in Indianapolis, and that's where it's kind of disappointing, I guess, the most, is that if this team had Oladipo, you feel like they could be a sleeper candidate to knock off the Bucks, because if they could steal one Milwaukee, they could win all 3 at home. Because they clearly played the Bucks better in Indianapolis. Giannis clearly, I mean, maybe not even Giannis, but somebody seems to struggle on the Bucks constantly when they're in Indianapolis. I mean, last time it was Giannis. This time it was Middleton, I thought, played pretty, you know, subpar for a guy of his caliber of an all-star level. So, I don't know. From this game, like I said, there isn't a ton of moral victory takeaway. I'm sorry to say that. It was a fine game. It was a fun game to watch. It was good that I got a tip that the crowd was pretty electric. It was a sold out crowd. Like, it's good to see the fans rallying behind this team without Oladipo, that they, you know, are trying to show management that, like, listen, we care. We like when you put together a good product, which is fine. you know, I still think if they didn't sign Wes Matthews, they still have a good product. But I think the fans in Indiana appreciate a team that is trying to put a good product out there. And again, this team's going to beat bad teams. I mean, they definitely don't look like they've taken a huge drop at Oladipo to the level of like, oh crap, are they even going to like survive the 4-5 game? They're going to be a top 5 seed in the East. They're going to probably get close to 50 wins. If I had to guess, they get to 50 wins, which is incredible for a team who best player to play 36. So all that stuff. So, you know, there isn't a ton to really complain about this team. I can pick things like I did with Aaron Holiday not being able to play minutes, but at the end of the day, overall, it's exciting that this team at least is not terrible without their best player. Let's take a quick break, and then I'm going to talk about the player I think is in a weird position. All right, the player I am talking about, I've been teasing for now going on 10 minutes, is Domantas Sabonis. You know, I don't know if he's banged up or, you know, and this is, I don't want to be wildly speculating, so let's be fair. He's probably not injured. But it seemed like really since the beginning of December, or since he got back from his one-game absence against Orlando, so I'm taking December 8th to now stats, he just has kind of been a lethargic or maybe about... probably the right word to say is out of place, where you feel like Sabonis, you know, when you look at Sabonis' per 36 numbers on the season, I mean, they're like 20 points and 13 rebounds and all these crazy stats, and instead he's putting up 14 and 9, which is really good for the 24 minutes he's played. And, you know, in the last 32 games since he came back from his injury, he's putting up 13.9 and 8.6. So it's not like he's putting down with different stats. His shooting's a little down overall, but it seems like to me he's being capped from his potential, and he's starting to realize it in a sense. Like, you can kind of see he's not really an opportunity to play with Turner in these two-center, what does Caitlin Cooper call them, plotter lineups kind of thing. He's not really an opportunity to do that. They're playing them in such small, minute instances that it's not really a thing, and so he's not really an opportunity to prove, okay, I can be the power forward for this team, or I can be basically the center hybrid forward next to Turner for the future. Essentially, they're using him as... you are a bench big who comes in, plays big minutes, can close when we need to pull up the big lineup, is a really good offensive player and all this stuff. But it feels like Sabonis is destined. And, you know, if he was on a team where he was the only center, he's playing 32 minutes, he'd put up, you know, an 18 and 12 kind of stat line, which seemed like he would be in store for a huge payday. And I don't know if he's worried about the money, because I think he's still going to get probably a 4-year, $72 million deal from the Pacers or something close to the Turner contract if they decide to keep him. But it feels like to me that he almost deserves to be on another team because he's being held down. And it's not necessarily a bad thing by the Pacers. It's not like they're trying to hold him down. It's that they have Miles Turner, who is the second or third best, if not the best defensive player in the league this season. And he's been a much better offensive player in the last 2 months, where he's kind of proven, listen, I'm the guy here. I'm the center. I'm the piece that you can get kind of other guys, and I'm going to be the third piece on a championship team. I think Turner's proven that. Whereas Sabonis might be that player, we don't know yet, but he's a lot of potential, and it feels like his destiny is to be traded. I mean, it feels like it's where we're heading. We're like, Sabonis needs to go to a team that is young, that can get a point guard, can get him, you know, a rebuilding team. Like, I mean, I hate to say this, but like, he, you know, if once Davis is gone out of the Pelicans, and they were flipping for Jrue Holiday, I could see that working out so well in New Orleans if they got the really good guard out of Murray State and got him, and they could just kind of build this team where they're playing pick and pop with Sabonis, and young guys Sabonis getting to play 32 minutes a night and take, how much is he taking right now per game? He's taking, real quick, he's taking 9 a game, where he's taking maybe like 14 shots a game, and he's shooting still like in the, you know, he's shooting 50% right now, but shooting maybe in the high 50s, and he's making 7 shots of those 14, 15, and he's putting up, you know, he's getting 4 or 5 free throws and all this stuff. And I could see him kind of that being his destiny and kind of growing with another little younger player into like this nice duo. And for the Pacers, it's kind of like, yeah, you want that guy on your team because he's a really overqualified backup center, and he might even be sixth man of the year this year, to be honest. But it's kind of like he probably wants to go somewhere else too. I mean, at the end of the day, I think as a competitor, Sabonis wants to win, right? And that's important. But I think he might also be kind of one of those guys who, you know, his dad, they would talk about as a legend, like he could pass out of the post, and he was this legendary 7'2" dude. And he might feel like, suppose himself might feel like, I can kind of be that player. I can be the player my dad was in Europe, and nobody ever got to see a rush. That's where he really was before. Then the people never got to see. I get to be that guy. You know, Bill Simmons loves me the comparison that Jokic is the nowadays Sabonis from Arvydas Sabonis, Domas's father. But maybe Sabonis feels like he can be that player. I could be the guy who can you know, Smosa is a pretty good passer, can pass out of the, you know, on the pick and roll a lot and can do things like that. So I don't know. To me, it feels like Sabonis, and I think he's realized it a little bit in a sense. You can kind of see it on his play where, like, he's finishing out the year hard and he wants to win, but now Oladipo's hurt. The destiny of this team is an early round playoff exit, and then, you know, in the summer, there's going to be speculation about him, about where he's going. Are they going to trade Sabonis? Are they going to package Sabonis Holiday and make a move? And that's probably what they ultimately end up doing. And so that's sort of what's happened. Maybe it's Sabonis in a first-round pick, whatever. But it seems like that's what the ultimate destiny is. It seems like Turner has separated himself as just a different player than Sabonis can do more. He's gotten the contract. He's got the support of management where, you know, I'm still not 100% sold that they would be better off with Sabonis in the long term, especially if he's cheaper. But I don't know. It seems like this is what Sabonis' destiny is, and I feel kind of bad for Sabonis because I feel like he'd be really good as a starting center on a team. I mean, I think he could have the real opportunity to be a really good starting center. You know, he might have trouble in the playoffs ultimately, but I feel like, you know, if you put him on a young team and is trying to grow into themselves, he could be the perfect guy. You know, he plays hard. He's not like a selfish center. He's not somebody begging for shots. He will pass out of the post. He'll make moves like that. He could grow as a young point guard. And so I hope that's what happens to him ultimately, to be honest, unless he becomes somehow this hybrid four, which I don't think the team thinks he can be. He thinks he can be that. And you can see it by them not playing those Sabonis Turner lineups very much. So, you know, it's going to be disappointing when Sabonis is traded, simply because I think he's a really good player and that's a really good piece of that Paul George trade. But if you're able to flip him and Holiday, or him and a first-round pick for a really good NBA player like a Drew Holiday or a Mike, I don't know if I give up that much for Mike Conley, but like one of those guys, you know, it's kind of interesting. Then you could say, well, essentially we traded Paul George for Oladipo. We traded Paul George in a first for Oladipo in the Drew Holiday, let's say, for example. That's a pretty good trade. You essentially turned one superstar into two superstars. Now, Paul George is maybe the third best player in the league this year, but you turned him into two guys who are the 20 and 25th or 20 and 20 and 30th best player. It's a pretty good move, in my opinion. So, while I love Sabonis and I would love to see him here long term, it just seems like he deserves to be somewhere else where he can really flourish into the player that he probably is destined to become. Let me know what you guys think of Sabonis and that thought. I mean, I do think there are people love Sabonis, but, you know, it might be time for him to go simply so he can fly his wings and be bigger than he is here as the sixth man in Indiana. But let me know by tweeting at LockedOnPacers or at FriedmanAdam5. You can tweet my co-host Tony East at TEASTNBA. That is all for his Locked On Pacers podcast. The only thing I have to say is I would look out for a mailbag tweet. Send in your questions to those Twitter accounts on a mailbag because we want to do that early next week after the All-Star game. So that is all for his Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.